This is CliffCentral.com.
Stefan Malherbe is the Genesis and Analytics Chair and the Managing Partner in Genesis Analytics. We'll talk to him a little bit about that, but the main reason that we're talking to him is to discover what it is that he's collaborating with ABSA on at WEF Africa. Now, to remind you, the World Economic Forum Africa is taking place in Cape Town from 4 to 6 September 2019, so get it in your diaries now. The aim is to tackle issues by focusing on how to scale up the transformation of regional architecture related to institutions, infrastructure, integration, industrialization, and innovation. Under the theme, Shaping Inclusive Growth and Shared Futures in the Fourth Industrial Revolution, ABSA will be erecting a centrally located dome which will house all of their activities during WEF Africa. As conveners of discussions on matters critical to the continent and the Fourth Industrial Revolution, one of the points that ABSA will be discussing is their collaboration for South Africa's readiness for the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Now, we hear lots of people in government talking about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. I'm very happy to have the Gibbs and Genesis Analytics Chair here for the discussion today, because we're talking about ABSA's involvement in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. But first, tell us, what is Genesis Analytics?
It started life, Gareth, as an economics consulting firm. Mm-hmm. And it grew into the largest thing of that sort in sub-Saharan Africa. But to be honest, there aren't that many others. No. But what we do is we use economics and a whole bunch of other disciplines to really understand and solve interesting and important problems, social problems, sometimes also commercial problems. And in doing so, we are really sort of focusing on the three big forces that will change the region's future. And
which
those
are?
Those are, first and foremost, of course, climate change. Hmm. Second one, global technological change, which is what we're discussing today. And the third one, demography, hey? Mm. So the region, by which I mean sub-Saharan Africa's population, will double between now and 2050.
Wow.
And it's really where those two things come together. The change in massive increase in youth population, together with dramatic changes in how people will work, how they will earn a living, and how they can fit into the global economy. It's where those two big forces meet that we work.
It's tremendous pressures. I mean, these are things that we can do very little about. They're inevitable, but what we can probably do is manage the situation a little better, right?
Yeah, I actually think, and that's the theme of what we'll be doing with ABSA at WEF Africa, is that there are tremendous opportunities, and many of those are short-term opportunities. But there's no doubt that that this so-called Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is a bit of a misnomer, I think, is a historic change that will have to be managed. You're right about that.
So I'm sure that there are going to be lots and lots of people who are very concerned about this, and you know how humans are naturally pessimistic, and we're immediately taken by the negative story. Now, that would mean unemployment. It would mean massive disruptions in the way that people live their lives, the way that they earn money, the way that they produce, the way that they sustain themselves. And we've spoken during the course of these interviews to a couple of interesting people, and I think you'd probably be interested in meeting them at WEF Africa as well, about everything from sustainability of, you know, water, wastewater, to the kinds of food that we might be eating in 10, 20 years from now that will be very different from the stuff that we're used to. Mm. That kind of change needn't be scary. I'm sure that in your think tank and other organizations, there are lots of reasons to be very optimistic.
Mm. Look, there's reasons to be worried and there are reasons to be optimistic. So on the worried side, current estimates are that in the Northern Hemisphere, just to start off with that, about a quarter of all jobs are of a nature, consist of tasks, of which around 70% or more will be automated by 2030. And about another third of jobs, between a third and 70%, of the tasks that make up those professions or occupations will be automated. So you can have significant job losses. And the numbers are not as well calculated for countries like South Africa, but they are sufficient to be scary. And where most of those job losses will occur will be where the South African job growth has been in the last 20 years, which was largely what economists would call non-traded services. Retail, tourism of a domestic kind, transport, government services. So there's stuff to worry about. But yeah, you're right that the most interesting aspect of the work that we're doing is that there are considerable grounds for optimism. And that's really how we structured this whole process, was to start off by finding the big opportunities for South Africa. And as it turns out, we found three of them.
Okay, well, let's talk about those, because I think people are in dire need of some good news. The economy, even though the job losses due to disintermediation by technology haven't yet taken place, the economy is hardly performing optimally as it is. Mm. So perhaps these things could give us the propulsion that we need to start taking our economy into the 21st century properly.
Yeah, so I think there is material growth opportunities. What we focused on were those opportunities that would create income and jobs of some kind. And what's important about this future is that income will not always be in the form of jobs. Income will often be in the form of gigs, in the form of portfolios of work, and so on and so forth. But to give you a sense of what we have focused on, of these three opportunities, one really deals with globally traded services. So it's now well known and well understood that many, many services that we would previously only have been able to get from the guy around the corner or somebody in your own city or your own town will now be deliverable across thousands and thousands of kilometers. That creates great opportunities, particularly for developing countries.
Mm-hmm. And access to markets.
Oh, yeah. And as it happens, in South Africa, over the last 3 years, we have been seeing significant growth in exactly those categories. Hmm. And this is not known by most people. So one element of that is what's called global business services. Those are call centers, but also other forms of services that are delivered to businesses. Over the last 3 years, the average growth per year in those jobs has been more than 20%.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
That's underreported.
Yeah, very underreported. And and that BPO sector, which has a very dynamic association that coordinates it called BPESA, is estimating that within the next 5 years, we can grow the export jobs there by 50,000. Although, arising from the work that we've done with them in this whole process, they are now ready to increase that job growth target to 100,000. And so far, they are on a month-by-month, quarter-by-quarter basis, pretty much tracking what's needed to achieve that.
Terrific. That's definitely reason for smiling. This is obviously going to raise the question that I think very few people are going to be able to avoid. The unions and the structure of our economy as it is at the moment, mining, agriculture, a lot of the more traditional enterprises, how are these going to fare in your estimation? And by, looking at the research that you've paid so much attention to, how do you estimate they will do in the upcoming years?
Mm. Look, as you pointed out a bit earlier, they are struggling already as it is. You know, the traditional sectors of the economy, some elements of mining, some elements of retail, some elements of the chemicals industry, of construction. I mean, some of these were big job creators in the past, are all really struggling. Not all of them will be affected by technological change
immediately,
but a lot will be over time. So the future of mining in South Africa is definitely much more automated than we have now.
And for various reasons, chiefly among those that there are cost savings, that there would be less danger to people putting themselves in the way of machinery and operations underground at severe temperatures and pressures. But there's also the added benefit that, again, we could import things that could probably do a much better and finer job with a lot less wastage and would have to be paid very little to nothing. You pay for it once.
This being the
machine,
the automation machine. Yeah, you know, it's a maybe. I mean, that's sort of the dystopian view, you know, that all of us are, you know, there's a machine that can replace you, there's a machine that can replace me.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, because this is where people like you are able to sketch a much more realistic picture for us. But I'm not basing this on science fiction movies. I just imagine that the future will involve a lot more free time and will allow human beings to do creative things and to be involved in stuff that they want to rather than stuff that they're just doing for survival.
Yeah. So in the long run, I think one might see a society evolve like that. For the society to evolve like that, there would need to be systems of transfer of wealth that vastly outscale the grant programs that we have now. So it's interesting.
Starting to sound like a Marxist now.
This must worry you. But, you know, the
should worry everyone.
So I just want to say that utopia may look very different, may have all kinds of elements to it that we may not be anticipating. What I think is true, though, is that the kind of jobs that will disappear will be routine jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important because a lot of jobs in South Africa are still routine jobs. Mm-hmm. The one thing, though, is that I don't think we can stop that from happening. It's hard to stop technology from seeping in. So what we really need to do, and that's maybe our most important message, is that because there are going to be job losses, we have to look out and prepare for the job gains. So, you know, automation has been a feature of each of the previous three industrial revolutions.
Yes.
That's what an industrial revolution means. It's replacement of what humans do by machines. However, in every single instance, those changes ultimately created more jobs than they destroyed.
Absolutely. And so, you know, just because the car was invented didn't mean that all those people had horses and buggies suddenly found themselves sitting on the side of the street with nothing to do.
Yeah.
They found other ways of making themselves useful in an economy. Yeah. Humans are quite good at that.
They are good at that. What's interesting, though, is when you combine the automation with a dramatic ability to trade your own, whatever it is that you do, across borders, across the whole globe, now suddenly you've got a much more fluid dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it may turn out that those jobs that humans can still do, personalized services, you know, all kinds of, you know, clever thinking and so on, can now be done in Mongolia, it can be done in Indonesia, in Kenya, in South Africa.
And very specialized skills can find application in a variety of places where before, if they were as niched as that, they might have struggled to find a market locally.
I think there's no doubt about that, that there's this sort of, and, you know, Upwork-type platforms and so on are creating a basis for that already. So I don't know if you know this, but, you know, there are 3,000 people in South Africa who wake up every morning and they go to work. This may be actually from their home or from a call center type operation. And what they do is they then interact the whole day long with Chinese adults to teach them English.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, there will be more and more of this. You can imagine a young woman in Alex sitting in her home even, or in a center of some kind. And what she is doing is she's watching a blind person in Norway trying to do shopping, trying to get around through a camera that would be, you know, somewhere just behind her ear or on her head, and she would be guiding her through what she must be doing. So there are lots and lots of opportunities. But because it's such a fluid situation between countries, those countries that are best prepared will get an outsized number of those jobs. And that's really where the policy hook comes in.
And also those countries that are best run will attract the best people. And there will be a flow to those countries which are not only, as you say, prepared, but are capable of doing things a little more effectively, which should be a warning to our government.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting how these things work. I mean, this business that we're sitting in now, you know, it had to be started by somebody with a spark and with an idea and with a sense of things, which is rare. And that's true of every business that gets started. So a lot of these new opportunities will not automatically percolate up from South Africans necessarily. So you want to create a work permit regime across borders that would allow those kind of super technical skills and ability to create applications using those new technologies in. And it doesn't matter whether this kid is from Pakistan or from Iceland.
I don't think the kid cares either where they're from or where they're going, as long as they can find the best place to practice their particular craft, skill, or talent.
True.
So this is actually exciting, and therefore I don't want this interview to be all about how, you know, desperate the situation is. While it is something that we need to be very aware of, what for you are the most exciting areas of the potential future economy?
Yeah, so in the near, there's near term and long term.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the near term, what we are really looking for is to create jobs for many, many South Africans. So perhaps the one that's the most mature I've mentioned, which is global business services, mm-hmm. which is call centers, BPO, shared services. And that's already growing. And so our estimate is that if we play this well, we can create that 100,000 jobs in the next 5 years, which would be extraordinary. If we play it really well, in the subsequent 7 years, all the way to 2030, we'll be able to create a total, including the first 100,000, of 500,000 jobs. So that's important, but we've got to build a lot of stuff for that. Access of a digital kind, skills, and we've got to find ways of penetrating the big English-speaking markets well. The second, I want to mention the second opportunity zone, because it's a big deal and it's already happening around us. And that is the job opportunities that are created by internet platforms. So, you know, if you take a business like Uber,
mm-hmm.
Uber did not exist 5 years ago in South Africa. Uber today, on its books, has 14,000 active drivers.
Amazing.
Yeah. They all earn above the minimum wage on a per hour basis.
Correct.
They have a competitor, Taxify, which will now be known as Bolt. Taxify is in more cities in South Africa than Uber. It's in, I think, 14 cities, mm-hmm. whereas Uber is in 3. It has created 10,000 jobs. Airbnb has created how many jobs in South Africa? More than 20,000.
Amazing.
Yeah. And there's more and more and more. And what's interesting about these jobs is that this is not going to take heads or sort of pointy-headed, data scientists and so on.
Mm-hmm.
These are relatively low-skilled jobs that are creating opportunities that were simply not there before.
That's a very interesting point you make. So when everybody gets into a room and starts talking about these things, what kind of people do you rely on to help you fulfill this picture in your mind of what the future might look like? Are we talking about data scientists? Are we talking about economists? Are we talking about social scientists?
You know, in the rooms that where we've been discussing these things, and we've been doing that deliberately by hosting dialogues in South Africa around these key points, but also the key constraints like, you know, skills, digital access, and so on. We've actually had relatively few of all of those. What we've had most of have been people with a gumption to have started new businesses and to figure out new business models and to try them. And there's a bunch of them. You know, Candu is a very good South African example of handy, traditional, what one would have called handyman kind of work. And they have a few thousand handymen on their system now, and they are growing very, very quickly. And there's a bunch of these South African startups. So those are the key people to have in the room and the key people for a government to understand. Because they don't live by government rules. They live by other rules.
And they also don't form part of the formal economy in the same way that employed people in a corporation do. I wonder what percentage of the tax burden these people have too. Because I think government will suddenly start to take them much more seriously when they start to see how much of the tax burden they're responsible for.
Yeah. So these, I think government is taking this seriously. So at the digital summit, the president gave a speech, and this was actually the best thing of the whole day. And so at the digital summit, which is kind of interesting, there were not many of the people that I just discussed, but there were many, many civil servants, which may tell you something about summits in South Africa. But why this was ultimately good was it was a moment where the president gave his civil servants their marching orders on the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And effectively what he said, look, there's going to be job losses, there's going to be pain, but there's lots of upside. So I think government is taking it seriously. I think some of these business models and approaches are so new, they rub up against vested interests. They rub up against existing regulatory regimes which are made for an entirely different business world, and they rub up against constraints. You know, the power of platforms is that what platforms really do, if you get to the bottom of it, whether it's PayPal, whether it's Kandua that we just mentioned, whether it's Airbnb, they effectively rewire the entire economy. I'm sure you've seen this quote that says, you know, Airbnb is the largest provider of
accommodation
in the world.
It owns no hotel accommodation. Yeah.
You know, the largest taxi business in the world doesn't own
Uber.
A car.
Mm-hmm.
The largest retail in the world, Alibaba, doesn't own any stock. That's the power of platforms. And you can just imagine the disruption and the screeches of pain from those being disrupted.
Oh, yeah. You could see it, though. I mean, a lot of people in business, they talk a big talk, and I'm sure a lot of these leaders will be present at WEF to find out for themselves whether or not they're talking the right game. But they don't really know which way to turn. A lot of them are dyed-in-the-wool, old-school business people who understand, you know, the basics and supply and demand and stock-taking and all of those things that once used to be the most important bread-and-butter issues in any business. And now they're faced with things that don't involve even inventory at all.
Yeah.
That, you know, it must
yeah.
be very, very confusing.
Yeah,
and I'm sympathetic. I am sympathetic. It gives me no schadenfreude to see these people sitting there miserable, knowing that their business is seeping away.
Yeah.
But I do think that for the consumer, in the end, it's a win.
Yeah.
I think for the economy, it can only, as you've the examples you've given indicate, the economy can only grow as a result of this. And we have to be open-minded and ready to adapt to change. Otherwise, you will be left behind and you won't have any tools to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
right.
This is interesting stuff. I just want to quickly refer specifically to South Africa in the Digital Age, which is a new initiative. It's a partnership between the Global Pathways for Prosperity Commission, Gordon Institute of Business Science, and Genesis Analytics. It's primed to work constructively with the Presidential Commission on 4IR and 4IRSA. Now, apparently this initiative will deliver the beginning stages of a national economic strategy for South Africa in the digital age to the President's Public-Private Growth Initiative. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of talking.
That's a lot of words. So the SADA initiative is basically exactly what I was describing now, which is it's an initiative that says, where are the big opportunities for South Africa, for economic and for job growth in particular? What do they look like?
Mm-hmm.
What's their internal logic? What do they need? And from that, what do they need, we can figure out how ready the country is. So the second step after identifying those three big opportunities, I've spoken about two of them, there's also a third, is to assess South Africa's digital readiness, which we're quite far with, in terms of things such as digital access, governance, innovative business, about five or six big factors. By doing a number of things, including engaging people in dialogues about what this future looks like and what's needed, and that's what we've been busy with. From that comes a document that will say, look, this is where the future's at. Hmm. This is what we need to reach it. And as you can hear, I think from the examples that I've been given, it's not an abstract exercise. It's quite a practical exercise with real goals
and there's quite a lot of data now. We're able to measure a lot of this where before it was guesswork. Yeah. So what's the third?
Yeah. The third
You're
one,
teasing me. You're kind yeah, of delivering yeah, these in yeah, installments.
That's, yeah, of course. The third one is, in many ways, the smallest at the moment and the biggest potentially. And that is to become a digital frontier country. And what does that mean? What that means is that when you look at the history of new technologies, the entities, people, businesses, universities that figured out the new technology made a very small proportion of the money out of it. Most money was made, continues to be made, by those people that find the smart applications.
So second and third generation use cases.
Yeah. So, you know, if you think about Facebook, Facebook did nothing that was technologically new for the first 15 years of its existence. Not a single thing. Not a single thing. And yet it became one of the 10 most valuable companies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. If you can be like a hive of activity here in Johannesburg, but in South Africa as a whole, that really has created an environment where people can use technology to develop new applications that they can then send into the rest of the region. Mm-hmm. That could be powerful. The problem, though, is that we are not best placed in sub-Saharan Africa now to play that role. Actually, Kenya's best place. And M-Pesa would be the best example of such an application from existing technology, which has now spread to many other countries. So there's a lot of work that we need to do to fulfill that third big opportunity, but potentially it can be very big.
So what do you think the chances are that we'll manage to get our act together in time? Because this stuff is already happening around us, and in some ways we've lost that, you know, prime mover advantage to Kenya and Nigeria. And not just in our old industries, in the case of Nigeria, but in our new industries too. Yeah. And there are lots of businesses that might have, and you know, very smart and innovative people who might have founded things here in South Africa that are now looking for ways to export those before they've even founded them here because of regulation and being tied up in you know, government just make it very clear that they're often only interested in things that can contribute to their bottom line and not to anything that's really particularly technologically advanced or interesting.
Gareth, you know, yes, there are certainly issues that arise here in SA, but you know, there's a big thing that's helping us.
What is that?
And that big thing is just the newness of what we're talking about and the fluidity of it, which means that vast areas of potential are really effectively unregulated. And there's still a lot of energy and creativity in this economy. So, you know, I've got kind of mixed feelings. You know, my one feeling is, whoa, there's a lot that we need to do as a society, as a country, as a business sector, as a government. On the other hand, there's a lot that's already happening that we just can't stop. And there is a youth focus to this. You know, young people have taken to this in a way that's very different from that old generation of business leaders that you're talking about. But the issue here is to scale it, that you don't have a few sort of interesting small businesses, but that you can scale it in a way that can really employ hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, ABSA are going to host a panel discussion in their dome on Thursday, the 5th of September. It'll draw on outputs from a digital readiness assessment, which has been conducted in South Africa by Genesis Analytics and the Gordon Institute of Business Science. This research will form part of a global investigation by the Pathways for Prosperity Commission. And tell me about them. Who are the Pathways for Prosperity?
Yeah, so that's an interesting story, hey? Here's a little legendary conversation between Bill and Melinda Gates. Belinda Gates turns to her husband and she says, makes exactly the point that we were discussing earlier. She says, you know, all of these jobs are going to disappear because of tech change. Where are those jobs going to come from? And so what the Gates Foundation decided to do was to establish a global commission to answer that question of new jobs and new pathways for growth for developing countries. Because the older pathways, some of the best pathways of the past might just disappear. Low-skill manufacturing, for example, which was really the dominant pathway from the 1990s to only a few years ago. And so they established this commission, but they looked for a home for it, and the home that they found was Oxford University. So the Pathways Commission, and it's now obvious why it's called the Pathways Commission, is a joint venture, a partnership between Oxford University and the Gates Foundation.
Ah, right.
And that's who they are.
And how do you integrate what they have already done and what you prepare to do together into what you and Gibbs are doing?
Yeah, so really from the beginning of the Pathways Commission's global work, we at Genesis were involved with them to do some original thinking. And because of that, they came to South Africa and said, does South Africa want to be the first pilot country for applying our ways of thinking to what the future might hold? And that's really where the SADA initiative, which is the subject of this event at the ABSA Dome, came from. And so we continue to work with them on a weekly basis with a flow of ideas in both directions.
Very interesting stuff. I wish you luck. I think the work you're doing is seminal. It's hugely important in a country like this where there are opportunities, but we really need to be aware and primed for them. Otherwise, we will have them slip through our hands. It's terrific to know that Genesis Analytics is busy doing their fair share and doing some of the heavy lifting for us, that the president is talking to you, that you have his ear, and that people like you and Nick Benedel can do whatever you can to try to spur on this fourth industrial revolution from the point of view of us taking advantage of it rather than being dragged along by it. Thank you very much.
And thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Stefan Malhaber, who is the Genesis Analytics Chair and Managing Partner.
This is CliffCentral.com.